They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Crossover Podcast. Glad you could join me this week on a very somber week in the NBA as the league continues to mourn Kobe Bryant, the Lakers legend who passed away along with his daughter Gianna and seven other passengers aboard a helicopter that crashed just tragically in Southern California on Sunday. Kobe's passing has really been felt not just across sports, but across everywhere. You see the news networks covering this story. You see late night talk show hosts devoting entire shows to this story. And it really goes to show just how influential and impactful Kobe Bryant has been on the lives of so many. So we're going to begin this podcast talking a little bit about Kobe. Ryan Rucco, the ESPN broadcaster, Yes Network broadcaster, he had a chance to cover Kobe for a number of years. We talk about Kobe's impact on the game, his impact on players, and just how significant it is that he's gone at such a young age. So stick around for that. It's a good conversation between myself and Ryan Rucco. A little bit later on, I had a chance to sit down with Terry Rozier just this past week, and it was a really fun conversation. I mean, Terry is nothing if not open and honest. And we talked about his decision to sign with the Charlotte Hornets. And we did a pretty deep dive on everything that happened last year. And he was very open about how things went wrong, not just for him, but for the team in general. As you well know, that Celtics team was one of the more dysfunctional teams that we've seen in the last few years. And Terry goes in depth on kind of what happened from his perspective. So stick around for that. It's a great conversation with Terry Rozier. So with that, on to my conversation with Ryan Rucco. All right, Ryan Rucco is here, ESPN broadcaster, Yes Network, and a guy that, how many Kobe Bryant games, Ryan, would you say you did?
That's a good question, man. It wasn't as many as I would have liked because Kobe was my favorite player growing up. So when I started doing NBA games, that was like one of the top things on my mind. It's like, when am I going to get to do a Kobe game, you know? And I think I missed him. At first, before I was doing national games, I was doing Nets games only. And I happened to not get the Nets Laker game, Ian had it, whatever. And then when I finally got Nets Lakers, it was the year he was hurt. And so the first time I do remember, I think I ended up doing two or three Kobe games or something like that. But the first one I'll always remember was October 30th of 2014. And I was calling with John Barry, and it was a Laker Clipper game. And early on in the first quarter, Kobe had this ridiculous reverse dunk, and it was like, oh my gosh, he could still do that, you know? There was just for me, there was this larger than life feel getting to call a Kobe dunk. For me, still is a top three career highlight.
Hey, you know, it's funny you say that because you don't want to one of the things I was writing earlier this week was Kobe was never the most athletic player or the most physically imposing player. I think that's what made him special. You can see what work got him. Hard work and dedication kind of got him. Because, he was 6'6", average size for a two guard, 212 pounds, not small, but not overwhelmingly big. He was he could dunk, but he wasn't super athletic like some of the guys that we've seen in the league. He just kind of, all the work he put in was what the end result was. Sure, he had great DNA from his father, Joe Bryant, but man, if he didn't work, you can certainly see him being a very average NBA player if he wasn't working like that.
What I thought was the most unique part of him was he obviously was ridiculously talented, right? But he was not a dude who was going to take his career for granted and just try and get by on that talent and leave to chance falling in that category you're talking about, right? He's no, clearly I'm dripping with talent, but I am going to outwork everybody. And that's what I love. I love seeing the dude. We know there are certain grinders who you look at and it's clearly they, that's their only path. I think with him, the part of the reason to me, like, the hard work stuck out is because, like, you knew he had the talent too, and he just didn't take it for granted, mm-hmm. man. And he was like, I'm going to milk every ounce of this opportunity out. And he did. I mean, I remember hearing, like, I mean, and you know, from covering the sport, like, the stories of his workouts and his work ethic was just legendary. CeCe told me an interesting story the other day. CeCe Sabathia, who I host a podcast with, the first time he was meeting Kobe, he was like, oh, I got to prepare myself. He said, I would always prepare myself for the kind of questions he would ask me when I was going to see him. He's like, and, you know, I really prepared myself first time because I knew Kobe was going to look at me and be like, this dude's fat. He's lazy. And he's like, and so I had to have my workout structure ready to regurgitate to him. So he knew, no, I'm just a big guy. I swear, I put in my work because he didn't want Kobe thinking he was lazy. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how crazy is that? Like, that's the aura that he created, that like other athletes wanted to make sure their work ethic was respected by Kobe's, because that's the reputation he had developed.
Even as a media member, I mean, Kobe was one of those few guys that, there are a lot of guys in this league that will, if you ask a shitty question, like, they'll kind of roll with it and, you know, give you a stock answer. But like, if you ask Kobe, and Kawhi's kind of like this too, and I thought KG was kind of like this too, like, if you ask them a question that didn't make any sense, they're going to look at you quizzically and be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, that's not... Is that a question? If you said talk about, like, you weren't going to weren't going to get a good answer generally from Kobe Bryant.
No, I love that. Like, because it challenges you, mm-hmm. right? Like, there are...
Really, to prepare yourself for a Kobe interview. Like, all right, here's what I'm going to ask. Here's how I'm going to respond. Like, because he's going to be smart in those situations.
100%, man. Max Kellerman was talking about this the other day. And, you know, and I know Max is a ridiculously smart person. Mm-hmm. And he was saying Kobe is the, you know, brightest athlete he's ever talked to in his life. And I think a lot of people feel that way. He definitely challenged you to be on your P's and Q's. And I think that, you know... there was a directness to him, you know, like that. When I was talking about this with CeCe and Jay Williams the other day, they're like, you know, it's almost like you start asking yourself, how does his mind even get to a place to ask that kind of question? You know, like, he just operated at that like Jedi level mindset, and you're trying to figure out like, wait, can I hang with this dude? And I like that. There was nothing cliche. And I think because of it, you know, we saw the weight of his words. Like, I even think about, there was a clip that went viral with him. I think it was last year at some point. He was asked about failure, and he was like, well, it's only failure if you stop. Otherwise, it's just a step to your next success. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I get chills thinking about it, because I'm like, yeah. Like, I mean, I think everyone can relate to his mentality and say, I can apply that. Mm-hmm. Like, that can work for me. Because I look at that and I say, yeah, he's right. Like, you know, you don't get a gig, I don't get a gig or something, and it feels like a failure, but mm-hmm. it's only a failure if we stop. How often have you ended up looking back at something like that because you have that grind in you and said, thank God that didn't happen?
Everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You never realize that at the time. It always seems like, you know, the end of the world, like you said, but there, you know, it pushes you even further if you're that kind of motivated. He was, I think that it really took me a couple of days to kind of understand the full gravity of the situation, of his death, and understand just what kind of impact he had on these guys. I mean, Kobe was the guy. Like, you mm-hmm. know, I think Scott Brooks said this, you know, for one generation it was Dr. J, another it was Michael Jordan. For the last 20 years, it was Kobe, even more so than LeBron at this point. Guys following him, and just the, you know, everywhere you go and everything you read, just all these guys, how it affected them, like just how it shook them to their core. I guess I didn't really expect that. I mean, I expected just the sense of sadness and loss, and, you know, comparing it sort of to Roberto Clemente, what happened with him in those circumstances. I don't think, did you expect to see what you saw with the reactions from Kobe's passing?
You know, I think that, I don't know that I would have known what to expect, because it was just so shocking. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's the most shocking thing I've ever experienced in my life, as far as, you know, a public figure passing away. It was number one on the list, you know. And I know some people have harkened back to JFK, you know, mm-hmm. and like that kind of shock. I think the thing that made it so emotional for the entire community, besides just the shock and horror of it all, is that he genuinely had hands on these guys, you know? And so I've said this over the last couple of days, every time I do an NBA game, I feel like somebody on my game board, there's a story about them working with Kobe, you know? And you and I know this last year he did the two-day, you know, special camp where he invited select guests to come out and work with him, you know? And if you look at the players in the NBA today who have at some point either reached out to Kobe for counsel, have had Kobe break down film with them, have had a session with him working out, like, it's remarkable how many of these guys truly have been touched directly by Kobe. And I think, you know, part of that emotional connection wasn't just the admiration for him, but it was the feeling like you had this godfather, you know, either directly working with you, or there's a resource just in case you needed it. You know, I think people knew. I even think about Isaiah Thomas a couple years ago when he was having that great run in Boston, and the way he leaned on Kobe, and Kobe talking about a lion's mindset, and like, you got to have that lion mind, like, and Isaiah really using that imagery to translate on the floor for him. And I think that's what's so hard for these guys is they didn't just know him as a figure who they grew up watching. They knew him as a coach and as a mentor and as a resource for them. And there's only but so many people on the planet who could offer what Kobe could.
Hey, it's funny, you mentioned those Boston teams, and I wrote this week that I go back to the 2018 playoffs when Boston was playing Cleveland, and Kobe came out with that detail on Jason Tatum like in the middle of the series. It was after game two, and there was like a 3-day gap between games two and game three. And, you know, Tatum said he watched that detail like 25 times, like just over and over again. And I remember they went on to lose that series. Tatum didn't play poorly after that, but I remember talking to the Celtics coaches, and they would kind of grumble like that Tatum's trying to incorporate Kobe's notes like in real time. Like he's just like, you know, Kobe tells him to put his foot here and do that and all that. And Tatum's out there trying to take that coaching, which, look, in general is great. In the middle of a playoff series,
it's
the conference
tough.
Finals, not so much. Like, and I remember a couple of coaches saying to me, like, man, can you just like, Kobe, could you wait till the offseason to like post that out there? That was like one final jab from Kobe to the Boston Celtics by getting Jason Tatum off his game a touch, however unintentional.
It's amazing though, right? Because that is the gravity that his words had for these guys. It's like you hear Kobe say, and you're like, well, I got to implement it instantly. He did a detail on Courtney Williams in the WNBA Finals. And, you know, part of my appreciation for Kobe as sort of this godfather of basketball also stemmed from his investment in the WNBA, which, you know, I broadcast
huge
the finals.
Huge advocate for WNBA.
My gosh, amazing. And I'll tell this story real quick, and then I'll tell you about the detail. But Kobe's my favorite player growing up. I've been around him a million times, but I never had interacted with him. And I, at the Barclays Center a month ago when he was there, that clip of him and his daughter, which has been circulating, before the game, Sarah Kustak and I, who I know is a regular on the pod and your good friend as well as mine, we're doing our open, and Kobe's out on the floor early with Gigi, just like watching the warm-ups. And, you know, normally, like, if you're a celebrity, you don't go to courtside till tip, right? Like, you're not out there while everyone's like kind of walking around pregame, whatever, but he wanted her to like watch the warm-ups and whatever. So he's sitting courtside, and it's just him and Gigi as Sarah and I are doing our open. So I get done. I'm like, I gotta just talk to Kobe. So I introduce myself and I'm talking to him, and I'm talking to him about the WNBA. And I'm like, man, I see both of you at courtside all the time at the games. Thank you for the way you support the league. Like, you know how good these women are, and your cosign means a ton. He's like, we're going to make sure everyone knows. He's like, we're going to spread the word. Like, that's a goal of mine now. I really want people to know we're going to get there. I promise you we're going to get there. I'm going to work on it. And what I loved was it was a couple days after that where he was courtside at Staples Center and he's rocking the WNBA hoodie, you know? And he was such an advocate. And so, you know, him doing the detail during the WNBA finals, he broke down Courtney Williams, and it was amazing the detail, no pun intended, that he went into. It shaped things I was watching then as I did the broadcast, and it was crazy. Like, I remember at one point Rebecca Lobo and I talking to each other like, oh my gosh, like, this is exactly what Kobe was talking about. And it was like, it was very nuanced things about like how she was like, I think it was, and I could be off, but it was like how she was like cutting after releasing a pass and stuff. He's like, no, she needs to start doing it. And it was like amazing how she did what he said then and had like two backdoor buckets like in the first, you know, 5 minutes or so. And it was just like, wow, you know, it's just, this is exactly what he was talking about. He had a genius mind for the game. He really did.
Yeah, and I think Kobe saw Gianna as, you know, the continuation of his legacy. Like, she could become the Kobe Bryant of the WNBA. I mean, who, maybe 13-year-old girl who knows how good they are at 13, anyone, boy or girl, but, you know, yet UConn already ready to go, offering her a scholarship. I mean, that absolutely could have been just such a, you know, over the next 10, 15, 20 years, just watching Gianna become a great women's basketball player, and Kobe with his magnetism by her side would have been just incredible for that.
It's heartbreaking, man. Yeah. I think we've all found ourselves emotional over the last few days. I know, like, I can't ever remember breaking down crying this much, you know, for the loss of someone who I, you know, didn't actually have a personal relationship with. And that part of it's so hard because, you know, you could see that special bond, you know? And it's weird because there's a part of you that like almost wants to feel comfort that they were together because they were thick as thieves, right? And then obviously there's the stronger part that just feels like, oh my gosh, you'll never see what could have been for this little girl. And I think you're right. I think like there was already this sort of excited interest in like, well, what's her career going to be? Because you could see how this was a serious craft to her already, and she was taking on dad's level of investment in the sport.
And she brought him back to basketball.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't a frequent visitor at Staples. She brought him back into the NBA fold, and I think the NBA is forever grateful for that time. You know what else is funny about what you learn? Like, one of the great things about the relieving things the last few days is all the testimonials about, like, Kobe checking in with people. Like, I started to think at the end of it, I'm like, did he just sit on his phone all day and check in with people? Like, I mean, you know, it's like Breonna Stewart checked in with me, you know, like, you know, football players, basketball players. He was checking in all the time with different people. He maintained a constant connection with so many across the league.
This is exactly what I was thinking. Like, I've been thinking over the last couple of years is I'm like, wait, how does he have time to work out with all of these guys? You know, and it's amazing, like, the way, you're right, like, he's touched base with all of them. And I think that's why, you know, I mean, even the story about, like, I knew Kyrie was good friends with Kobe. I had no idea Kyrie was, like, FaceTiming Kobe in the locker room after they won the finals.
That's a great story, yeah.
Great story. I think Brian Windhorst told it the other day. Like, It's I've gotten to know now just how close Kyrie was with Kobe, but like, it's amazing how many of these guys felt that level of connection. And, you know, I was thinking about LeBron and how hard this must be hitting him because, you know, as much as fans of Kobe and LeBron certainly had a rivalry, those two have always had a close relationship. And even more so than their relationship, for me, it's this. There are only a couple people on the planet who know what it's like to be LeBron James, you know, who have some semblance of knowledge of what it is like to be LeBron James and can relate and can communicate. And Kobe was one of those people, you know. I mean, I'd say Kobe and MJ. And those are really the only people on the planet that can have those kind of conversations with LeBron. And I'm not so sure that Jordan's the kind of guy and has that relationship with LeBron where he's having those conversations, you know? And so
I think Kobe probably had them after his retirement more. Like
100%.
I mean, he was so cutthroat in his playing days.
The way he was competitive, he wasn't being buddy-buddy.
Yeah.
He wasn't going doing workouts
like Brady
like
that. In that way.
Yes.
Like, I remember the story of like Robert Griffin walking up to Brady once and trying to pick his brain, and Brady was like, when I'm done.
Yeah.
When I'm done.
And
that's kind of what Kobe was like.
And I love that. I think we all love that as a fierce competitor. And that's what's been amazing, seeing his generosity giving back now afterwards, right? Because it like belies this fierce, isolated competitor that you saw during his playing days. But at this point, right, like, there has to be a sense of loneliness for LeBron James because who else can have those kind of conversations with him now? You know, he just lost, you know, maybe the only other person who could have these kind of chats. And so I think about LeBron in that regard too, because besides losing his friend, I think he also lost, you know, a very unique resource, you know, maybe the only other person who can relate to the things he feels and experiences.
Yeah, no question. Let me finish with this. There's been a lot of talk about how the NBA should honor Kobe. You've seen, you know, the Mavericks have said that nobody will ever wear number 24 there again. I honestly can't see any player ever wearing 24 again. Like that, I mean, whether a team retires the jersey or not, there's not going to be a player, at least in the next 20 plus years, that ever says, I want to wear number 24. How do you think what should the league do here? Not in the short term, because I think, and I had this idea, and it's been picked up a couple places, like about, you know, wear number 8. One team wears number 8 at All-Star, one team wears 24.
I love that. Throughout.
Like, just
I love that.
An easy way to kind of honor. But, like, in a more permanent level, there's been some thought about, you know, should they change the logo to Kobe, even though the NBA's never actually acknowledged that Jerry West is the logo.
Yeah,
like
I know.
They're very much,
funny.
Like, against, like, yeah. It may be Jerry West, but yeah. They're not going to be the ones to say it. What if you were Adam Silver, what would you do to honor Kobe?
I think one of the things I would do is I would really try and think about hosting an annual event on August 24th, 8/24, which also is the day after his birthday, and something that feels totally communal and is somehow pushing the game forward, right? That's inclusive of male, female, young, established. Like, I don't know what the event is. Maybe it's some sort of huge tournament that incorporates several levels of basketball. You know, maybe it's some sort of special showcase, some sort of like incredible clinic. I don't know, but something on 8/24 every year that becomes like an NBA sanctioned event, but that incorporates multiple levels of basketball because he was so dedicated to, you know, continuing to grow the sport. And so I would like to see them do that. I absolutely think they should do what you're talking about for the All-Star game. I saw your tweet. I love that idea. Have one team wear 8, have one team wear 24. It's perfect. And, you know, this year the All-Star game is going to be all about Kobe. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that would be completely appropriate. I do also think that, you know, there's been so much talk about changing the logo in recent years that I think I would change it to Kobe. I don't think it's inappropriate. I don't think it's rash. You know, it's not just as if like an all-time great has left us, right? We're talking about, you know, in the most shocking circumstances, losing an all-time great and somebody who just loved the game. You know, like to me, that's one of the things I love is, you know, sometimes we come across people who are great at something, but they don't love it. You know, like it's like, yeah, they're really great at this, but like, do they eat it? Do they breathe it? Is it everything? Is it in their being? Is it just like when you think like this, when you think this sport or this craft or whatever, like do you think of them and everything in their soul? Like that's Kobe Bryant, you know? Like you think about how basketball just like pulsed through his soul. And so that's why I think the logo would be appropriate, mm-hmm. You know, because I think, you know, we think about someone who just truly loved every aspect of the sport and the competition. That's him. So I think among other things, like those would be certain ways to honor him. And I would be open to anything. You know, I mean, I did wonder, like, are some of these players, might they want to wear it to honor him, mm-hmm. You know, instead of, but it feels like more of them will want to not wear the number.
Yeah, I've found more don't. Even talking to Kemba Walker the other night, like he wears number 8 and he said he's thinking about changing that number. So I think more will want to shy away from it. And I don't see anybody wearing it anytime. I love the idea of 8/24 and it having sort of a multi-level basketball.
Yeah.
It's such a clear date in the NBA schedule. There's nothing going on.
Right.
So you can build everything around it.
Exactly.
And everyone would show up for it, you know, no matter where it was.
100%. And especially, you know, it's still like it's far enough removed from the end of the season that guys have had their breaks, mm-hmm. Right? Like they're starting to come back towards their cities and work out at their facilities and whatever. Like there's definitely, there's something that can be done. And I don't know what it is, but there's something that can be done to properly honor him on that day that brings together just the basketball community.
Yeah,
you know?
It'd be an incredible event no matter where it is.
Yeah.
Ryan Rucco, ESPN, Yes Network. Thanks for giving me your perspective, man.
Yeah, thank you for giving me the chance to, man. I love Kobe, and, you know, I think one of the beautiful aspects in the aftermath of this tragedy is just, you know, seeing the harmony of people and just being able to express the way Kobe impacted us.
Definitely, definitely. All right, Terry Rozier is in. Charlotte Hornets guard, Scary Terry, T. Rose. Did you have any other nicknames growing up?
Chum, C-H-U-M, P-Ro, Rose, T, Little T.
Oh, it's just, how did you keep track of them?
Oh, you know, just family members just calling me different things. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just running with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what just how that happened.
What did Rick Pitino call you?
Son. Son. I'm going to kill you, son.
Yeah, that's that my was guy. Most common
reference. Yeah. Yep. Mm. Yep.
He, what's it like for a guy like to get recruited by Rick Pitino?
I kind of like talked myself into going there. Mm. I was every interview that I was getting before I was committed anywhere, or before, you know, I had offers, I was telling people I wanted to go to the University of Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
Because I fell in love with the university, obviously, because people know, because of the story on Sebastian Telfair. And I fell in love with Rick Pitino before I even met him. Mm-hmm. Anything, the white suits, their colors, and watching their games on TV. So I kind of talked myself into that.
Mm. How did he connect with you?
I remember like yesterday, me being at LeBron James camp, and you know, I'm playing, and just after I got done doing a couple of interviews, telling people I wanted to go there, I look up and I just see him. I think his son and Joaquin, and they're just watching. And I was just like, no, I gotta show off. I gotta, you know, show what I'm about. And then, like after that, it was history.
Mm-hmm. I remember that was such an underrated draft class, the 2015 Louisville group. You and Montrezl Harrell coming out, because you went in the middle of the first round. And Harrell goes in the second round, which I never understood.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
the guy won like the Karl Malone Award that year, and yeah, put up like 15 and 10. Teams just talk themselves out of production sometimes. Like,
for sure.
What are we looking at here with this guy?
Exactly.
Was that, I mean, how big a surprise? I mean, you going where you were was one thing, but how big a surprise was seeing your teammate fall the second round?
Oh man, it was huge. It was a big surprise, man. It was just, you know, obviously being around him for 2 years, him carrying that weight, him, you know, me feeding off his energy so much he's done in that year. I was kind of shocked, but he worked hard, and you know, he's making him pay now. Whether mm-hmm. it was first, second round, he's doing what he got to do to show that he belong in this league.
Mm-hmm. Kid from Youngstown going to play for Rick Pitino. Youngstown's a tough place. I've been there a few times. I was covering Kelly Pavlik out there for a while.
Okay.
Remember him?
Yeah.
Boxer out there.
He was.
He told me. I remember asking him, because he had some drinking problems during his career, and I remember asking him, like, Kelly, why don't you get out of Youngstown? He's like, no, it's a great place. Some celebrities live here. I go, which one? He goes, the guy that invented the Bowflex lives down the street.
it's a great place. Yeah, that's funny.
I'm like, man, move out of there. Get out of that place. So here you are now, starting point guard, 35 minutes a game, career highs in shooting percentage, 3-point percentage. Got your own bobblehead. I saw that coming in here. I don't really love that likeness. That's not. I don't know if that
doesn't
you,
look like me. So.
That doesn't look like you.
But I'll take it. You know, I appreciate the love.
You'll take it. Has the first half of this first year in Charlotte been what you expected?
You know what, to be honest, I kind of didn't know what to expect. Obviously, I'm excited to be in my position. Something I asked for. Didn't know how things would go. You know, it's just something that you prepare for it. And, you know, you just try to go out there and you try to make the best of it. Things could have went better for me. I feel like I could have did a lot of things better from the start of the season. Yes, I don't, you know, but it's slowly progressing towards where I want to get it, but I still can play a lot more better than what I'm showing right now.
Was this, you mentioned that you asked for this, was this the kind of opportunity you were looking for in the offseason?
Yeah. I mean, it was something I was looking for after my 2 years. You know, I don't know how many guys would just accept being in the league and not wanting to be a starter. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of them. You know, it was just something, me coming up under IT, me watching Kyrie, it was something like, okay, now let me get a turn. It's my turn, you know, coming up under them great guards, learning so much. And, you know, I was just, I feel like it was ready. I was ready for it. It was my time. Man, you know, I didn't want to stay second string. I didn't want to stay coming off the bench, you know, my whole career. Mm-hmm. That's something, I feel like it's something you just work towards starting and you stay there. And that's what I'm in a position now to do.
Did it get into your head at all in the offseason where do you want to be the guy that replaces Kemba down here? Do you think, does that cross your mind at all?
Not before it got serious. Mm-hmm. Like, not before the talks. It was, I didn't think, like, okay, well, I didn't know where I would end up. I kind of know, like, you know, obviously it's a crazy business. Dealing with, you know, free agency is not easy.
Nobody ever goes into free agency when they're done with throws. Like, I don't want to do that again. Like that. Everybody wants to go into it, and then it's like, no.
I didn't know what to expect, to be honest, but it's crazy. Mm. It's crazy. And, you know, you really don't get to sleep trying to find out where, you know, your next home is going to be, where you're going to lay your head at, what city's going, you know, is going to be your next home. And, you know, I didn't have, it wasn't in my mind to, oh, well, Charlotte's a place I can go. I'll place with Kemba because, you know, I thought he would be here, you know. Just didn't know what to expect, but, you know, it kind of worked out. And I'm happy it worked out the way it did.
What was something about free agency that you didn't see coming? Like the...
Just the amount of calls. How many times you talk to your agent, and you know, and you really like, you really planning to. Like I said, you really don't know where your next city, where you're gonna lay your head at. So it's really like, now it's decision time. You got to make some decisions now. And I didn't know how crazy that would get. I just didn't. You know, you had an idea of it, but until you're in it, you don't really know.
Mm. Was going back to Boston ever an option for you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely was.
Mm-hmm. Definitely was. How'd that evolve that it went the other way?
Well, you know, I just, you know, you just kind of hear talks, and you know, I kind of was hearing that they wanted Kemba.
Mm-hmm.
Before anything came out. You know, I didn't look at it as a slap in the face at all or anything like that. You know, you know, Kemba is who he is. He's an all-star. Why not try to go get one of the best guards? And you know, and I just say, all right, well, we take Boston out the equation, and now we try to find where else can I end up, and that's all. But you know, it's no hard feelings. But yes, Boston is one of the places I wanted to, you know, return to, but it just didn't work out that way.
Were you kind of hoping, any part of you, like, you know, Kyrie's leaving, maybe you can pick up where you left off in 2018 with the same group? You see kind of what they're doing now, and were you hoping that maybe you, that was some part of you hoping you could get there?
Yeah, that was definitely was my mindset. That was my mindset. I know Kyrie was out of there, and you know, I had thoughts that, you know, maybe, well, okay, well, I can be the point guard. Let's make that happen. Let's go back to what we did 2 years ago, and you know, let's try to make something happen. But like I said, and you start hearing about the Kemba things, and then, you know, I probably didn't help when I went on ESPN, and you know, when I went on Thing and said what I said, that probably didn't help either. So you know, it probably was just miscommunication and stuff like that, but yeah. Mm. That's how that happened.
Do you regret the ESPN stuff?
No. Mm. I don't regret anything that I did, that I've done in my life. Anything.
I've noticed that about you.
Yeah. I don't regret
it's
anything.
It's all part of the path, right?
Yep. Yep. Mm. I never look back. I always look forward. I feel like I had a plan not to say much, but they did their job to get me to talk. Mm-hmm. And you know, I commend them. What's his name?
Stephen A. Smith, Max.
Stephen A. Smith, yeah. All of them. They do a great job getting, mm-hmm, you to talk. My intentions was not to talk. The first interview I did, I wasn't talking that much. I wasn't giving them that much information. Mm-hmm. Wasn't trying to let. But you know, I had so much kind of, you know, was anger. A lot of things was balled up, and it kind of like it just, hey, it happened. It, mm-hmm, it just snapped. It came out. And, but like I said, I don't regret anything that I've done in my life.
Did that hurt your relationship with Danny, with the team?
I wouldn't say it hurt. It was just, I just didn't understand. I kind of understood, but I didn't understand. Obviously, I say I know it's a business, so I got to act like I know it's a business. Mm. You got to know how things work. It was just that it was just tough on me. It was just tough on me. I feel like I had a great run in the playoffs. And, you know, I wanted to really pick up where I left off. A lot of things I blame myself for. I could have prepared a lot better. I could have just been like, all right, well, I'm just gonna be a hustle guy or something like that. I could have took a different route. I could have played it, you know. I could have took a different route how I went about things. But I was just caught up in myself because, you know, I'd be lying if I, you know, I'm a free agent. I was gonna be a free agent after that year. Mm. So no matter what I told myself, it was still that. It always came in the back of my mind, like, I want to still show the world what I can do, because, you know, if Kyrie have a bad season, he's gonna be fine. He's Kyrie Irving already. He can prove what he can do. Terry Rozier is just, you know, I mean, what he did in the playoffs, we might know what he can do. So that's where it just used to bother me, and I just feel like once he stood up in front of the fans and said that if they allow him to come back, I feel like ever since that day, people looked at me. It was just like, no, there's no need for you no more.
So that moment had a big impact on you.
I didn't even know he was planning on doing that. So I was like shocked. I was like, oh shoot, you know. But and then it was just like, I just seen people, just attitude change. You know, I just seen things happen differently. But like I said, it's a business. So you got to just understand it. And you got to know it. And I've seen so much things happen in front of my eyes. You know, with guys, with older guys in front of me. I don't know why. I took a lot of things to heart, like I did.
You think team-wide that moment had an effect on everyone when Kyrie said he was coming back?
You said what?
You think team-wide that moment Kyrie said it, or do you think it was just you? When?
I think a lot of guys were shocked. Everybody didn't know that he was planning on, you know, saying that in front of all the fans. But I know I didn't really ask. I didn't really sit down and ask anybody, did it have effect on them? And it didn't really have effect on me right then and there. You know, I was happy for him. Like, okay, yeah, you coming back. Like, that's good. Like, I wasn't, you know, I'm never throwing salt on nobody's game. I'm never a hater. I'm like, okay, that's good. But once I seen how people kind of, like, threw me in the trunk, like, threw me in the back seat, it was like, then it kind of came a problem for me. Like, how do I cope with this, like, every day?
Even after that play, I mean, you were great in that playoffs. Like, that was... Yeah. You were as much a reason as anybody that team went to Game 7 against Cleveland.
Yeah, you know, and you know, things happen, and like I said, Kyrie Irving is Kyrie Irving, and I can never take that away. I wasn't coming back. So people got it confused. I wasn't coming back that season like, oh, shit, I'm starting over Kyrie. Mm-hmm. Like, that was never a thought of my mind. But, you know, I was just seeing how things, you know, just change.
No, and you had, I remember vividly, you had exactly the right attitude in your exit meeting that year. You said, Kyrie's the starting point guard. He's coming back. This is his team. Make no bones about it. It must have gotten harder for you when the games started to be playing, right?
Yeah, I had a great summer. I had a great summer. A lot of fun. Put in a lot of work. But yeah, like I said, it just I feel like it just didn't go as planned for all of us. It ain't about me. It was for all of us. But that was my problem. I feel like different guys had different problems. That was my main problem.
You had a lifetime of experiences in just a few years in Boston. I mean, you went from a guy that fans didn't want them to draft in that slot. I remember hearing people say, we should have drafted R.J. Hunter there, and they drafted R.J. later on. And then you show signs you can play in that second year. Then comes 2018, you got a Drew Bledsoe name and a whine after you. Yeah. And then, I mean, it felt from the outside like a real roller coaster for you.
Yeah. Yeah, but a fun roller coaster. A fun roller coaster. Like I said, I never really get a chance to look back. I always look forward. I always, you know, embrace the memories that I had. Great 4 years. Great 4 years. The ups and downs. Wasn't traded for nothing. It made me, you know, become more of a businessman, more smarter, obviously wiser, work on my game more. Coming from one of them top organizations like that in Boston, it's like, I won't settle for nothing less. No matter where I go, I feel like things need to be done right. And you know, like I said, it worked out great.
What's something you learned from Brad at your time there?
Something I learned from Brad is just him being a student of the game, him being a student of your game, and being a student of the game of basketball. Period. He can pick anybody apart. He can walk in the room and knows everything about you, maybe how you feeling. He knows like how to pick a player apart. And, you know, I always respected that about Brad. Smart as hell. smart as hell. It still used to amaze me. I tell people all the time, before I even was playing, and you know, I'd be sometimes be frustrated, but like timeouts, I'm tuned in to timeouts, especially late game, to see what kind of plays he draw up. It's unbelievable. Got some of the best plays I ever seen, and it's just like he could take something. It's the plays he drew up is just a little example of him like knowing the opponents, knowing just breaking the whole game down, and something that you wouldn't expect him to do, and making it happen like that. So,
how did he pick you apart?
He knew I was a competitor. He knew the toughness. I play off toughness. He always told me from the beginning, I'll have a great career, and you know, basically just stay patient. But you know, he just challenged me every day, man. He allowed me to be myself. He challenged me every day. He let me play with emotion sometimes, and you know, and it worked out for me. It worked out for me, and you know, if I can thank him every day, I would. Him and Danny. I told Danny, you know, I can never have no bad blood with you. Anything, you changed my life. It really changed my life when they called my name in that draft. That's life changing for me. So, you know, him and Danny, you know, them two guys, just they know basketball, man. They on another level over there.
Did you notice it? Was it different with Brad and Kyrie, because Kyrie came over as a winner? He was a champion. He was more of a form product than some of you younger guys were. Was the dynamic different with those two?
I feel like it was more of. It kind of wasn't coach player. It was kind of like coach, younger coach. So it's like when he came over there, he won a championship. Him being who he is, Kyrie had a lot, you know, like a lot of stuff that he felt that can change, that he wanted to change about the Celtics. Like this all on court things, you know, and he felt like he knew a lot of his basketball. And it wasn't like them just going back and forth. We're going to do it my way. We're going to do it your way. But you could just tell, like, when Kyrie came, he was kind of advanced, and he wanted to do something. He had his little input, and he wasn't holding back. He you know, he would say what he felt that we can change or we can do, or like that. And you know, and sometimes it'll work out for us. Sometimes it wouldn't. Sometimes, you know, they'd talk it out and make it happen. But I just feel like he was already on that championship mind. He had that championship mindset, so he let that carry with him everywhere he go.
I think a lot of people wonder why it was so different that second year, because it seemed like you guys had a thing going right up until his injury in that first year he was there, and then it all kind of came under the seams in that second year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot of it, man. You take him and Gordon, two guys who's been in the All-Star, you know, who's already looked at like they got a name. Then, you know, they get hurt, along with Smart get hurt, Tyus, you know, a couple guys get hurt, and now it's just like we look at it like, oh, you know, this season is over. We don't have the depth. We having our main guys go down, and then now we shock the world. We do a lot of good things, and then now next year is like you got them same guys, me, JB, JT. We having a crazy summer. We having, you know, we putting in the work. We having a lot of fun, but our mindset is going in like, let's pick up where we left off. But then it's like it don't happen that way, because now you got Kyrie back. We trying to make sure Gordon feeling great again. We trying to get him a lot of touches so he can get back in his mindset. You know, he can feel good about himself, because you know, dealing with that injury, it's not easy. I'm sure. So we had a lot of things that we wanted to make a lot of people happy, and then we had some guys that wasn't happy, and you know, it just didn't work out like that. We had all the talent, but if guys is not happy, things are not clicking, if people are not on the same page, then I don't care who you got on the same team. It's not gonna work.
How hard was that with Gordon, trying to kind of work him back in? Because you're right, like you had to kind of force feed him some minutes early on to try to bring back the player he once was.
It was tough, man. It was tough. You know, sometimes you just gotta understand, you know, that relationship between coach and Gordon. He coached him in college. He come back the first game of the season, him coaching him, he goes down. So I understand all of it. And then, you know, he is, no matter if he got hurt or not, him, he already, he, you know, he made it, he's Gordon Hayward. So it's like you just can't go away from him. You can't treat him like he's just a regular player anyway. Mm-hmm. You gotta make sure he get his touches. But I just kind of feel like that was more of a focus point for us. And I feel like it was too much of a focus point for us to try to get him going instead of, you know, making sure everybody was, you know, on the same page. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, I don't have all the answers, but I didn't kind of agree with that.
Mm-hmm. It seems like you still keep close tabs on the guys that you're friends with on the team. You follow your Twitter account. You're retweeting Jalen stuff, retweeting Jason stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
You've been keeping track of them?
Oh, of course. You know, I'm big fans of JT, JB. You know, any of them guys doing good. Smart, one of my favorite teammates I ever. Mm. You know, crazy, but one of the guys.
Give me a craziest Smart story that people may not.
I can't tell you guys.
Give me a PG version of a crazy Smart story. We've
PG
heard a few.
Shoot. I'm gonna come back to you.
Okay.
I'm gonna come back to you on that.
Is he as intense? Off the court as
Man. Sometimes it just made you like, what the heck? what the hell is you doing, Smart? You gotta love him. You gotta love him, and you know, I just grew to love Smart even more. You know, just through his craziness, and you know, probably when he lost his mom, you know, I was just always there for him, and you know, just treat him like a brother. And he did the same thing. So you know, we just kept growing. But I always keep up with them guys, man. Even kept up with Tice. Tice, that's my guy. You know,
he's having a really good year.
He's playing very well. Yeah. He's playing very well. You know, so I'm always, and it makes sense. I remember being there last year. Larry Nigger gave me a clip to watch on Kemba this last year. It probably was like a 20-minute clip. Mm-hmm. So they was already recruiting. That's what they was doing. Nah, it's a joke. But I'm always keeping up with the guys, no matter who it is. That whole, you know, on down, all the coaches, everybody, Nick saying, like all my guys, that's still family over there.
Those must have been, and now that I think of it, some hellacious practices last year with, you know, your talent, Marcus defense, Kyrie out there when he's playing. I mean, you guys must have gone at it.
Oh, we was going at it. And then we played 1-on-1 after practice. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. It's something that you had to be there to see. And even when we first got there after the summer and we was playing pickup, it was intense. You know, you had so much talent. It was like, this year is going to be – this year is going to be crazy because it's like pick your poison. Mm-hmm.
As disappointing as it was, do you take something away from that helps you at 25 years old go into the next phase of your career? Like something like, you know, I'll never make that mistake again. That'll never happen to me again.
I can't say.
Lesson, I guess, you take from it?
Speak less and do more. Talk less and do more. Mm-hmm. Instead of feeling sorry for yourself, put the work in. Put the work in, stay under the radar, wait till it's your time again. You know, that's what I just tried to do after a while. Just, you know, just like stop complaining, T-Row. Just do what you got to do. And prepare for the next stage of your life. Mm-hmm. So I was making sure I just kept working like every day in practice, before practice, after practice. Even though, you know, I wouldn't, you know, I feel like I could have did a lot more, but I made sure I was running on the treadmill every day. I was making sure I stayed in shape, but I was always telling myself I'm working for down the road. I'm not so much worried about right now. I'm just going to let things play out. But like I said, talk less, do more.
What made you come to that conclusion? Was there a moment or?
Just sometimes less is more, man. Nobody really cares. Nobody really cares, to be honest with you. If I say I don't care about people's opinion all the time and I do stuff for my loved ones, then why am I complaining? I feel like when I'm complaining, I'm crying out to the people that I say I don't really care about. Mm-hmm. If they don't matter, then you know, just keep grinding. But like I said, nobody cares. Nobody's gonna feel sorry for you. Mm-hmm. Nobody's gonna feel sorry for you. Mm-hmm. So, at the end of the day, you just gotta make things happen. And that's what I want to be. I want to be successful. I want to be a guy. I want that change the people around me lives forever. But complaining is not gonna get me there.
Mm-hmm. Marcus Smart did a podcast with Zach Lowe recently where he said, last year's team didn't know how to talk to each other. Do you know what he means by that when he says that?
Yeah, because we had probably the most meetings in NBA history. We probably had the most meetings after games, and we still couldn't leave it right there in the locker room. We still couldn't. And I had said in an interview, I wish, you know, so I could have said something differently to Kyrie. Like, maybe, you know, just let him know, like, this ain't working. Let's try something else. But, I bit my tongue a lot because I was still caught up in me. And that's just what it was. I feel like everybody had their own problems, whether it was coaches, whether it was players. And we didn't talk. We didn't leave it there. We didn't get it out. And like I said, we had so many meetings to try to figure it out, but we just never left it. We never put it all out there and left it there. Mm-hmm. I think we all held something inside of us still and allow us to get in each other's way, blow up about it, and it didn't work out right.
Even with all those meetings, you couldn't get it off your chest. And isn't that the point of those meetings, to try to kind of say what you want to say?
Yeah, no, for sure. But I feel like a lot of guys, including myself, like, if I complained about something, then it would have just been about me. Mm-hmm. Nobody want to hear that. We're trying to fix the problems within this team. It ain't about you, Terry. But I still wish I could have said what I had to say earlier, because I would have felt better. And then maybe, you know, guys would have know how I feel. Then maybe if I would have said it, then it gave somebody else leverage. Oh, hey, well, let me tell them how I feel and stuff like that. And I feel like if we could have just... Maybe if we could all just left it out there, we would have been a little bit better, did a little bit better than what we did. Mm-hmm.
I know you don't have regrets, but if you could do one thing over all of last season or Game 7 against Cleveland in 2018, which would you take?
Oh, Game 7. By far.
That was hard.
I still, to be honest, I try not to look back. I try to move forward. But it kind of still eat me up about that Game 7.
You were so good in Game 6. Like, so I thought good. Everything.
That's my, you know, and I joke around with people. I tell people I was ready in the series Game 6. Y'all was ready. I wasn't ready Game 7. I was ready into Game 6. I always wish, like, man, I can get that one back. And you just hear, sometimes you hear people talk like, you're going to think back about this and be like, maybe you would have never, probably never ever get a chance to go to the finals again. And it's just something like that was one of my moments. I wish I could have been better. I wish I could have been better for them guys. I wish I could have been better for them organization, for them fans, and for myself, for my loved ones. Like, I wish I could have been better. Because we would have got a 30 for 30. Mm-hmm. We would have been 30 for 30 did on us. We was always saying that in the little interviews, having fun. And that whole run was just... So much fun.
And you had played, you know, historically with that team, you'd played Golden State pretty well.
Yeah,
you
know? No, for sure.
We matched up pretty well.
We always, in my years with the Celtics, every time we went over there to their place, we always won. Probably not every time, but we won more, you know, more times than not.
There was a while, I think you were the only team in the league with like a 500 record against Golden State.
That makes sense. And when they wasn't losing at home, we was going over there winning, but. You know, who knows how that would have played out, but, you know, that just never happened, and I wish I can get it back. But that, for sure, over last year.
Do you think was it the moment, that Game 7? Were you tired? I mean, you had played a lot. You were, like, close to 40 minutes a game at one point.
No, I can't blame it on anything but just a bad performance. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't use no excuse. I just didn't make shots. I didn't play well. And I just wish I can get it back.
Mm-hmm. Coming here, you knew what you were getting into when you signed on. This team's trying to build something from the ground up again, rebuilding. I'm guessing some of the losing streaks, first time in your career you've had to deal with stuff like this. I mean, how are you handling it? How are you deal with it day to day?
It sucks. It sucks, to be honest with you. But you just try to see the better situation in things. I don't like using that we're young and we got so much to look for in the future. I'm not that I'm about right now. I feel like we right there a lot of games. We right there. We just can't pull it out, and that's part of being young, unexperienced. A lot of guys unexperienced. My first time being in this position where I got a voice all the time, or the ball is always in my hands. But I like it. I like it. I feel like we is a piece away, a piece two away that can be special. We got a lot of guys. We got a great locker room, guys that want to work, want to win, want to listen. funny guys, great guys. You know, it's just great coaches. So like I said, we right there. I just wish that we can close out games more, but I feel like it can happen for us.
Do you use that voice more? I mean, do you step up into that role?
Oh yeah, definitely, especially more now than I ever talked in my life. Mm-hmm. Make sure, and my main message to the guys is just tell them just to play, just be yourself. Sometimes you playing this game and you worry about so much, whether it's social media, the fans that's looking, your coach is telling you one thing, and sometimes you forget that you got yourself here, and you got to look yourself in the mirror, and you got to tell yourself what you're capable of, and you got to go out there and just hoop. Like I tell guys all the time, just relax, just be yourself, just play. Mm-hmm. And it's easier said than done. A lot of people don't think that pro athletes deal with so much, and it messes with your mind when you go out there and play. But I just try to tell the younger guys, when they relax and they plan, it make them feel better. Mm-hmm. And Miles get the message a lot, and he go out there and sometimes he'd do something wild the next play, but he settle in and he just play, and it works out.
What do you think about the relationship with you and Devontae? That's one of the more interesting younger backcourts in the league, especially the way he jumped this season.
Oh yeah, man, it's good. It's good, mm-hmm. man. I allowed Devontae to be who he is. He allowed me to be who I am. Great guy. We kick it a lot. Mm-hmm. Kick it a lot outside of basketball. We just two guys that like the ball in their hands, like mm-hmm. to make plays for ourselves or others, and we just making it work.
Can that work over time? Like if you two are here for several more years, can that be can your style of plays mesh in a successful team?
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. I think it's only gonna get better. Mm-hmm. I think it's only gonna get better. It won't get worse. From my understanding, I think this is what they wanna do mm-hmm. down the line in the future. So I think it can work. I think it's only gonna get better, and we gotta make it work. Me and him. Nobody else can make it work for me and him. Mm-hmm. Me and him gotta make it work.
Mm-hmm. Terry Rozier, always appreciate your time, man. Last chance telling Marcus Smart story. Anything from
Marcus Smart? I will not tell on you, man. I can't do it.
He tell on you.
I can't. Yeah, he would. He would. I can't do it. Right out of there. I can't do it. I love you, Smart.
Best defensive player you've gone against.
Best defensive.
Where does he stack up there?
I mean, I just remember my rookie year, me first coming in, getting ready for summer league, and he just being so aggressive. I just get there like he being so aggressive, and I'm thinking like, okay, maybe he being aggressive because I'm the 16th pick or something, or he maybe feel threatened or whatever. But no, that's Smart. Like he's super aggressive. But I told myself in the back of my head like, me and him, we're gonna fight. We're gonna end up fighting before this is over with. But that's just Smart, man. He's super aggressive. He's gonna leave it all out there. Mm. He want to win, and he make winning plays.
Did you ever fight?
We got into it a couple times.
Never fought.
I probably have to get something to hit him upside the head with. He's a little bit too big.
Terry, man, always appreciate it. Good to see you again.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you. Nice to see you.